Have a tree question and you're stumped? We're out in the yard with certified arborist John Eisenhower with Integrity Tree Service. Call with your questions right now at 1-888-ROSIE-4U.
Thank you, John, for being our certified arborist here in the Talking Tree segment. He's got a couple of hosts. We're at the annual tree conference held by the Arizona Community Tree Council. So if there's a neck of the woods, there's even a gentleman here who lives in Salom and works for the city of Quartzsite. So no matter what nook or cranny you're calling from Arizona, we can probably track down a local an arborist here at the Prescott Resort that may even know what tree you're talking about. Because I don't know about y'all. I just look at trees in general. But I'm sure as the industry, you probably, you know, this tree on that road and this tree over here. I mean, you're constantly looking at trees, even the ones you're not taking care of. It wouldn't be hard in an area you're familiar with for someone to call and be like, oh, you know what, I've seen that tree or just like that.
Well, we all refer to our trees' knowledge with reference to elevations. And when I head up to northern Arizona, I'm sort of out of my league when it comes to some of the trees. So it's great to be able to lean on guys like Gary and others who know these trees in the area. Quartzsite does not have a whole lot of trees. There's a lot of desert, a lot of creosote out there, but not a lot of trees.
I didn't say he was busy. I just said he worked for the city as the arborist.
Well, I heard you snagged a leaf off a tree last night. What was that about?
You know, it was a low-hanging branch as I was walking back to my hotel from downtown, and it was a low-hanging branch. I thought, man, that is a gorgeous tree. I'm gonna pick a leaf and get it identified. What have I got here, Gary?
Well, you have a sycamore tree. This leaf is from the sycamore tree, which does very well here in Prescott area. And, of course, even pretty drought-tolerant, and it does very well. The city has even planted some of these in their along the roadways. So, yeah, it's a very...
Yeah, I know.
they're fast-growing, right?
Fast-growing.
Pretty tall.
And I would say the only thing about them is in the fall when the leaves drop, they don't. They hang on all winter long, and they drop sporadically throughout the winter.
Interesting.
As opposed to the ash, where it dumps all of its leaves pretty much over a couple-week period.
Exactly.
And you can clean them all up and be done with it. Whereas the sycamore is going to cause your cleanup to extend right through the whole winter.
Sycamore is going to have you employed all winter, yes.
Yeah. And dropping all – it has those little fruit –
little seed balls,
seed balls.
And those things will hang on too, and then they'll drop, and you'll have those too.
Well, let's get to our calls. I believe first on the line is Doug. Welcome to the program, sir. How may we help you?
Hi, guys. Thanks for giving me a few minutes of your time. I have two majestic ashes that I planted about 8 months ago. They're about 12 feet tall. They were nice and green and healthy when they went in. But as the summer's rolled on,
About eight months ago.
As the summer has rolled on, I'm getting browning on the tips of the leaves, and then on one of the trees, the leaves are actually curling in some on themselves from side to side, rolling in. They're just not dark green like they used to be. I deep water 2 to 3 times a week. You know, I'll let the soaker hose go out there for maybe an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours. And there is some new growth pushing out on the top of the tree, but they look very distressed, and obviously I don't want to lose them, so I'm looking for some guidance on what I should do to try to save them.
Well, I'm not an expert on sign language for tree experts, but there's a lot going on here, so I think you got some experts that are communicating here.
Well, let me just start by saying, you know, when an 8-month-old tree has just made it through a brutal summer, I assume you are in Avondale, do I understand?
Peoria. You're
in Peoria, okay, your Phoenix area. You know, the tree's going to be showing some signs of normal summer stress. And what you not need to be careful is of doing is to not over-respond by trying to treat all those symptoms of a little bit of leaf browning, tip browning, or even leaf curl by watering excessively. It sounds like if you're watering an hour and a half to 2 hours, 2 or 3 times a week, that may be too much for a tree. Although ash can be pretty thirsty, you want to be very careful that you're not setting up conditions for fungal pathogens to become active. If you're, you know, robbing the tree of the necessary oxygen that the root system needs to survive, you could actually be, you know, creating even more problems for the tree. As important as water is for the tree's survival, the root system also needs to dry out adequately between waterings for oxygen availability to the roots. So just be careful that you're not watering too much. That being said, there may be some other issues you're facing. Can either of you guys weigh in on any of those?
If you're in the Peoria area, probably the house that you're living in was built in an old cotton field. And with the flood irrigation that took place and all that agriculture, there's probably a lot of salt residue still in the soil.
Really? How long will that hang on?
Until it leaches past. It sits there and just locks onto the soil. But if you're watering, like you say, for an hour, hour and a half, a couple times a week, you probably have done a fairly good job of leaching it past the roots if you're watering outside the root zone. Now, your 12-foot-tall Majestic probably planted as a 24 or 30-inch box. And your root zone right by this time is a good 3 foot outside of the original root ball. And that's where you need to get the water to. And most of those feeder roots are going to be in the top 12 to 18 inches. So you want to be able to saturate and flush the salts past that point, but get water to those roots.
There you go, Doug. That's some great advice in getting your ash nursed back to health. Next online,
we've got Jerry mentioned some coffee grounds and wondered if they're good for trees and plants.
Yeah.
Jerry, how can we help you?
Oh, yeah. I was wondering, people say that putting coffee grounds down, especially like a new small tree, is that good for trees, or is it only good for plants and vegetables?
No, it's good all the way around. It helps to acidify the soil. You know, your coffee grounds are full of some acids, and we have predominantly alkaline soil in the Phoenix area and even in Tucson. We've got a... we're always wanting to try to find ways to reduce to lower the pH, and coffee grounds are one way of doing that. They also provide, they're a great compost material too. You can throw them into your compost pile and mix them in, but actually spreading them in and around your roses or your in your flower beds and even around your trees is perfectly fine. It's I wouldn't overdo it. I wouldn't get a 30-pound bag from Starbucks and cultivate it in around a single plant. You want to be use it sparingly, and just collect your own coffee grounds and spread them widely around your yard.
We appreciate the call. We're now going to head down south on 10 into Tucson and bring our next caller into the conversation.
Yeah, he's got Robert here. You got a Chinese elm tree that was pruned aggressively and now it's not doing so well. How can we help you?
Yes, I'm from Phoenix. What I did was just prune the interior branches, so I created a canopy. And now on a sisu or a mesquite, Chilean mesquite, it'll flesh out again, but this one just stays kind of lean. And I just wondered, is that because the tree just gets the message that it shouldn't be sprouting interior branches once you prune them, or is there something about the Chinese elm?
No, Chinese elms are a smooth bark tree. They're very susceptible to sunburn. You have to be very careful. You don't over prune the interior. Like a lot of other smooth bark trees, like your ash, you need to be that interior foliage plays a very vital role of protecting the interior branches from too much sun. That being said, there's an improper pruning practice called lion's tailing. Lion's tailing is the excessive removal of those interlateral branches, usually at the neglect of the outer third of the canopy. And as you said, you kind of created a more of a canopy tree. And I know that that's very popular because it looks good. There's an aesthetic value in being able to see the branch structure. But what happens when you do that is you open the interior of the tree to too much sun. And quite often sunburn occurs before the tree has a chance to replenish that foliage. And if the cambium is damaged inside of the tree, it will never produce any new growth. And mesquites, which are a little more rough bark tree, can sustain a little bit more of that sunlight. And unfortunately, elms and ash and smooth barked trees don't don't fare as well. So I'm sorry to hear that it's not doing so well. You might want to consider wrapping the trunk and the main stems for a year or so with a burlap fabric or another tree wrap to kind of protect it from any further sun damage until the outer canopy gets a little fuller and can provide the shade you need.
And you seem to be more of a fan of wrapping than painting.
Right. Tree paint, you know, provides some limited protection. It reduces the surface temperature of the tree slightly, maybe a degree or two. But actually wrapping the branches provides a physical barrier and a protection from the sun. You can also put on your smaller trees, you know, cover them with a shade cloth over the outside of the tree, which is another remedy. But we found on larger trees, you know, you can purchase a burlap wrap material. It's 6-inch wide burlap, and you can actually wrap it around the branches and provide a physical protection.
Now, if growing up, I always loved climbing trees, I always loved ropes. I got more knot books, and I was everywhere with knots, and I'd never go anywhere without a rope. And the more time I spend learning about the arborist industry, I mean, if that would be my second career. You get knots and tree climbing all day long.
Yeah.
We had a fun opportunity yesterday to learn how to, what do you call this?
Splicing.
Splicing and making, what do they call this?
Yeah, this is a spider leg is what it's called. It's a little lanyard that's used for rigging applications when we're lowering large branches down or using a crane to lift some pieces out of a tree. But it just gave us an opportunity, a model for us to learn how to do some splicing.
It's very interesting, and the more I spin around, the more I realize I don't know anything about trees. You think, you put some water on it and fertilize it and go, but there's so much to know about trees. It's very incredible. I also have a newfound respect here for your industry. Have you seen this? The Southwest Tree and Turf publication has a 2009 to 2013 four-year nationwide stats on arborist deaths.
No, I don't want to hear this statistic, I'm afraid.
What? Yeah. 70 from electrocutions.
Yeah, 70 fatalities.
Is this from power lines of people running into them?
Either due to direct or indirect contact, yeah. Either touching the line or touching the line with a tool that you're using or possibly a truck or a bucket.
A lot of falls, ladder falls, tree falls, slips, etc.
Yeah, slips and falls, and yeah, it's a very dangerous industry. This is why we're here this weekend, is learning more about safety, learning more about how to do tree work the right way. We focus at these conferences on best practices for our industry, how to do things the right way, and the professionals who show up here are the small core of good quality companies who take education seriously and are willing to spend the money and the weekend to come and learn how to do it best.